From King Pururava. Eva. Thus. Asit. There was. Trayi. The Vedic principles of karma, jnana, and upasana. Treta Mukhe. In the beginning of Treta Yuga. Ripa. O King Pariksit. Ajnana. Simply by generating the fire of sacrifice. Prajaya. By his son. Raja. King Pururava. Lokam. To the planet. Gandharvam. Of the Gandharvas. Ivan. Achieved. Translation. O Maharaja Pariksit, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, King Pururava inaugurated a karma kanda sacrifice. Thus, Pururava, who considered the yajnic fire his son, was able to go to Gandharva Loka as he desired. We can repeat. O Maharaja Pariksit, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, King Pururava inaugurated a karma kanda sacrifice. Thus, Pururava, who considered the yajnic fire his son, was able to go to Gandharva Loka as he desired. So, purport by divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Shri Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada Vijay. In Satyuga, Lord Narayan was worshipped by meditation, Kriteya Yayato Vishwanum. Indeed, everyone always meditated upon Lord Vishnu Narayana and achieved every success by this process of meditation. In the next yuga, Treta Yuga, the performance of Yajna began Tritayam Yajato Mukahai. Therefore, this verse says, Trayi Treta Mukhe. Ritualistic ceremonies are generally called fruitive activities. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that in Treta Yuga, beginning in the Swayambhuva Manvantara, ritualistic fruitive activities were similarly manifested from Priyavrata, etc. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled King Pururava, enchanted by Urvashi. The next three. These are topics we already talked about in the last few verses, so we're going to go on to the next chapter right now. And the next chapter is about Parashuram, the warrior incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God, in chapter 15. So, chapter summary. This chapter describes the history of Gaudi in the dynasty of Ayla. From the womb of Urvashi came six sons, namely Ayu, Chutayu, Satyayu, Vareya, Jaya, and Vijaya. The son of Shutaya was Vasuman. The son of Yayu was Shutanjaya. The son of Raya was Eka. The son of Jaya was Amita. And the son of Vijaya was Bhima. Bhima's son was named Kanchana. The son of Kanchana was Hotraka. And the son of Hotraka was Janu, who was celebrated for having drunk all the water of the Ganges in one sip. The descendants of Janu, one after the other, were Puru, Balaka, Ajatka, and Kusha. The sons of Kusha were Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu, and Kushanava. From Kushambu came Gaudi, who had a daughter named Satyavati. Satyavati married Vijaka Muni after the Muni contributed a substantial dowry. And from the womb of Satyavati by Vijaka Muni, Jamadagni was born. The son of Jamadagni was Ram or Parashuram. When a king named Kartavira Arjuna stole Jamadagni's desire cow, Parashuram was ascertained by learned scholars to be a Shaktavesh incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Kartavira Arjuna. Later, he annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty 21 times. After Parashurama killed Kartavira Arjuna, Jamadagni told him that killing a king is sinful and that as a Brahmin, he should have tolerated the offense. Therefore, Yamadagni advised Parashuram to atone for his sin by traveling to various holy places. So we'll read the next few texts. Text 1. Shri Bharayani Urvacha Koilasha Chorvashi Gorvat Sadasan Atmajanrpa Ayushitayu Satyayu Rayotal Jayo Jayaha. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikshit, from the womb of Urvashi, six sons were generated for Bhai, for Uruva. Their names were Ayushitayu, Asatyayu, Raya, Vijaya, and Vijaya. Text 2 to 3. Shutayor Vasumantu Tra Sajayoscha Shutanjayaha Rajyas Arayasya Sutahi Kascha Jayasya Taneho Mitakha Vimastu Vijayasya Ta Kunchino Trakastata Tasha Janu Sutho Gangam Kandushu Kritya Yopibat. The son of Shutayu was Vasuman, the son of Sajayu, the Shutanjaya, the son of Raya Eka, the son of Jaya Amita, and the son of Vijaya Bhima. The son of Bhima was Kanchana, the son of Kanchana was Hotraka, and the son of Hotraka was Janu, who drank all the water of the Ganges in one sip. Text 4. Janastu purustasyata balakashchat najojakaha tata kushyat kushyasyapi kushambhustaneho vasohu kushanabhascha chatvaro gadirasit kushambhujaha. The son of Janu was Puru. The son of Puru was Balaka. The son of Balaka was Ajaka. And the son of Ajaka was Kusha. Kusha had four sons named Kushambu, Taniya, Vasu, and Kushanava. The son of Kushambu was Gadi. And finally, we'll read texts 5 to 6. Apasya sajavatim kanyam richiko yachata vijaha varam vishadrisham mukva gadir bhargavam mahabhavit ikatasyam karnanam vayanam chandravarchasam sahasram diyatam shurkam Kanyaya Kushikavayam. King Gadi had a daughter named Satyavati, whom a Brahmin sage named Richika requested from the king to be his wife. King Gadi, however, regarded Richika as an unfit husband for his daughter, and therefore he told the Brahmin, My dear sir, I belong to the dynasty of Kusha. Because we are aristocratic Kshatriyas, you have to give some dowry for my daughter. Therefore, bring at least 1,000 horses, each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, whether right or left. Good request. So, purport. The son of King Gadi was Vishvamitra, who was said to be a Brahmin and Kshatriya combined. Vishvamitra attained the status of a Brahmarshi, as explained later. From the marriage of Satyavati with Richika, Muni would come a son with the spirit of a Kshatriya. King Gaudi demanded that an uncommon request be fulfilled before the Brahmin Richika could marry his daughter. So, I'm going to tell some of the stories here. So, Om Gnan Timiranda Shaganan Janan Shakaya Chakshuran Minikam Ganantas Maya Shigarve Namaha. So, here we're talking about Brahmins marrying Kshatriyas. And that's called an anulom marriage. There's two types of mixed marriages. There's anulom and pratilom. Now, pratilom is against the principles where you have a higher class lady marry a lower class man. And, of course, there's some stories about that, too, in the Vedic literature. But anyway, so that's generally prohibited where you have a higher class lady marry a lower class man. When a higher class man marries a lower class lady, that's all right. Why is that? I mean, actually, there's a good reason for that. Because when a higher class lady marries a lower class man, then she's actually more intelligent than the man, and plus more self-controlled than the man. Because the higher up you go in the varnas, the more self-controlled you become. You understand? Like if you're a Shudra, you're not at all self-controlled. In fact, someone has to control you. That's what Shudra means. And then if you're a Vaishya, then you have these unlimited desires for wealth, more and more wealth. Then if you're a Kshatriya, you have desires to conquer, to control. And if you're a Brahmin, you're actually self-controlled. So to have a self-controlled lady, of course that's what a Brahmin lady is supposed to be, I need to tell you. To have a self-controlled lady marry a man is just basically, it's not self-controlled, doesn't work. But to have a man who's self-controlled marry a lady who's lesser than self-controlled, it works, because the lady is supposed to follow in the footsteps of the husband and be chaste. The husband, that's why it works. Not the opposite, that the husband is supposed to follow in the footsteps of the wife and simply dedicate himself to the service of the wife. I mean, that's a stable marriage. I hate to tell you. You don't know color, you know, you may not agree with that. Anyway, just like, I mean, let's give an example of Devyani and Ayati. Okay, that's a good example. We were hearing about that previously. Devyani, of course, was a Brahmin's daughter. Of course, her father was, I guess, a Brahmin. You could say he's a Brahmin, but not the most self-controlled Brahmin. He was Shukracharya. He was the Brahmin or the guru of the demons. And so she was married to Yayati through the tricks of fate. We're not going to get into the whole story because you've heard the story before. But anyway, there's a trick of fate because she was cursed not to marry a Brahmin. So her father, Shukracharya, told Yayati, do not have any relationships with Devyani's friends, who happened to accompany Devyani, one of which was Dharmishtha. And basically, Yayati couldn't refuse the bid offer. And actually, that's also the king's dharma. I was just reading in the first canon of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna has left the planet. Arjuna has just come back from trying to visit Krishna, but actually when he ran to visit Krishna, he discovered that Krishna left. And not only did he discover that Krishna left, but he was taking Krishna's wives away from Dwarka, as Dwarka was getting flooded. And Krishna's wives were kidnapped, and Arjuna was powerless to protect Krishna's wives. And actually, Krishna's wives were kidnapped by coward men, which is interesting. It has nothing to do with the topic today, but I'll just tell you a little bit about this. Because Krishna's wives, they wanted to enter into Krishna. This is the esoteric explanation explained by Vishnu Chakrabarti backward. They wanted to enter into the relationship with Krishna when he was a coward boy. So Krishna expanded himself as coward man to kidnap his own wives to fulfill their desire. It's interesting, isn't it? You ever hear that before? Anyway, some of you may not have heard that before. So anyway, so Arjuna, getting back to the story, so Arjuna gets back to Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira Maharaj is asking Arjuna, what's the problem? You're in a state of deep depression. Is it because of this? Is it because of that? He goes through the whole list. But one of the things he mentions, is it because a woman approached you who you were supposed to accept, and you didn't accept her also, he said. A woman approached you who you weren't supposed to accept, and you did accept her. Anyway, is that why you're in a state of depression? So anyway, the point is, one of the Kshatriya's duties is, thank God there's no Kshatriya's here, is that if a woman, a proper relationship of a same caste or lower class approaches the Kshatriya is supposed to get married to her. That's why it's dangerous to be a Kshatriya. Of course, in Kali Yuga, Kalo Shudra Sambhavata, so that's another issue. So anyway, so basically, people should be marrying others of the same caste or the lower caste. That was the whole point I was making. Or else there's problems, like in the case of King Yayati. He accepted Sarmishta, and Sarmishta approached him, and it was the proper thing for him to reciprocate with her in that particular way. And he gave her some children. But Devyani was really upset, and her father reciprocated with Devyani by giving Yayati this nice thing called old age, or making him impotent. And Yayati, eventually Yayati exchanges old age with one of his sons, but that's another issue. So here, we're talking about, also in this particular verse, we're talking about varnas, and marriages between two people in different varnas, and Srila Prabhupada mentions in this particular purport the story of Viswamitra Muni, who is said to be a Brahmin and Kshatriya combined, as the Prabhupada says in the purport. And actually, he was a Kshatriya, basically with some Shudra and Vaishya tendencies, to be more precise, who later became a Brahmin. And here's the whole story. I thought that'd be interesting to tell. Once upon a time, many, many years ago, Vasishtha Muni was in his ashram. Vasishtha Muni is one of the Sapta Rishis, the seven great Rishis in the creation. And he was in his ashram chanting Japa, Hare Krishna. And Viswamitra, who was not a Muni at this particular point, he was in charge of the kingdom. He came by with all of his horses and all of his men, and he was received very nicely by Vasishtha Muni. Vasishtha Muni not only received him nicely, but said to him, I'll feed all of you. And Vishwamitra Muni, Vishwamitra king, Raj, said, how can you do that? You're just a poor sage. And Vasishtha Muni produced his kamadhenu, and he said, I'll do it. So Viswamitra, he came with all his horses and men and everything like that. They filled the ashram of Vasishtha Muni, and they sat down to take prasadam and whatever they all wanted. It's not that they just had the same preparation for everybody. Pretty good, isn't it? Imagine a Sunday feast like that. You sit down with all your guests and you say, just think of whatever you want, and that's what you eat today. Of course, it was me. I just asked for quinoa. Quinoa boiled vegetables. That's it. So anyway, so after they all ate whatever they wanted, then the desire cow produced like girls to dance for him. I wouldn't ask for that. I definitely would not ask for girls. I just asked for a new computer from the desire cow. So anyway, so Viswamitra was so impressed by this, he thought, wow, I have to have her, because she could give me everything I need as a king. So he went to Vasishtha and he said, all right, I'll exchange several cows, more cows, millions of cows. And Vasishtha Muni said, no way. And so Viswamitra said, all right, I'm going to take her anyway. So he went and he grabbed her. And she was able to extricate herself from Vishwamitra's grasp. And she came back and said to Vasishtha, what do you want? You know, why don't you protect me? And Vasishtha said, you got to protect yourself. And as soon as he said, protect yourself, then out of her udder and rear end came all these different Kshatriyas. And not only Kshatriyas, but Malechas, Yavanas, Rakshasas, everything. And attacked Viswamitra and his different forces. And very interesting. And then it was described hundreds of warriors, Shakas. Viswamitra tried to fire a missile. And then out of her udder came these things called Kambojas, Yavanas, Shakas, Malechas, Haritas, and Karatas. In other words, even Moleches came out to attack. And then the sons of Viswamitra got really upset and they rushed to attack Vishishtamuni. And Vishishtamuni, what did? He just went, om. And they were all instantaneously cremated. Pretty good, right? And naturally, Viswamitra became very depressed at that particular juncture. He began to approach Lord Shiva and perform austerities to please Lord Shiva. He went to the Himalayas and he got all the weapons of the gods, the Danavas, the Daityas, etc. He became very, very powerful. So then he attacked the ashram again of Vishishtamuni. And all Vishishtamuni's brahmacharis and wives and children, they all ran away. But Vishishta just held up his staff. And with this staff, he was able to absorb all the different weapons. Even the Brahmastra. That's how powerful he was. And Vishishtamuni was glorified at this particular point by the demigods. And Viswamitra went to the south to perform austerities. And first of all, he became a vegan, that's described. Yeah, he became a raw food vegan. That is described. I mean, I'm giving the story from the Ramayana and from the Mahabharata. That was his austerity. So, and he performed austerities, and he went to this place called Pushkara, which is where Lord Brahma is worshipped. And Lord Brahma blessed him after some time, that you should become a Rajavishi. That means a sage amongst the kings. And Viswamitra was really depressed after that. He thought, you know, I'm never going to be able to feed Vishishta. So he began to perform more austerities. And while he was performing more austerities, something happens. Such an interesting story. This person, Sri Shankar, who was a king, wanted to go to heaven in the same body. So he went to, first of all, he went to Vishishta. Vishishta refused. Then he went to Vishishtamuni's sons. Vishishtamuni's sons cursed him to look like a chandala. So previously he looked pretty good as a king, pretty handsome and everything like that. But when he was cursed, all his jewelry turned black and he became ugly, all ugly features, big nose. And, you know, God knows what else he looked like. And so this Sri Shankar went to Viswamitra and said, I was refused by Vishishtamuni and refused by Vishishtamuni's son, so let's do a sacrifice. Please enable me to go back to home, back to heaven, without changing my body. So everyone came to that sacrifice because he invited everyone except for Vishishtamuni and Vishishtamuni's sons. So at that point, Viswamitra became so upset with Vishishtamuni's sons that he cursed Vishishtamuni's sons to die. Vishishtamuni's sons died, and Vishishtamuni became so upset having his sons died, he tried to commit suicide by jumping from a mountain. He jumped from the mountain. Prabhupada tells some of these stories. He jumped from the mountain, and somehow or other, the stones below the mountain became like pillars. So he wasn't hurt. Then he started to drown himself, but the ocean or the lake or the river washed him to the shore, so he's unsuccessful. So in the meantime, Viswamitra tried to enable Sri Shankar to go to heaven, and none of the demigods came. They didn't take him to heaven. So Viswamitra was able to send Sri Shankar to heaven by his own power. The demigods didn't appreciate that, so Sri Shankar was sent back down, and he was hanging head down, upside down, you know, going back and forth, bouncing back and forth like a yo-yo. Finally, Viswamitra made a deal, we'll create an artificial heaven or a second heaven for Sri Shankar, and Sri Shankar was actually still there today. And then, Viswamitra had lost all of his potency because he had utilized it all in enabling Sri Shankar to have his own heaven. So then he went somewhere else, actually stayed in Pushkara, and continued his raw vegan diet. That's really interesting. And then he was meditating, and as he was meditating, trying to become a Brahmin, he was meditating under a tree and a bird passed stool on his head, as birds do because birds aren't very controlled. And then he cursed the bird and the bird burnt up immediately. And then he lost, the Samaja lost his potency again because he had utilized all of his potency for improper purpose. Then the Trisana Tri Shambhu was Harishchandra, and Vishwamitra wanted to test him, and there's that whole story of Harishchandra, which we're not going to tell right now because it's a long story. Vasishtha Muni, who was the guru of Harishchandra, became very angry at Vishwamitra, and he basically cursed Vishwamitra to become a bird. And Vasishtha Muni was cursed by Vishwamitra Muni, or Vishwamitra, at the same time to become a duck. And so the bird and the duck fought with each other. Prabhupada also tells this story. For many, many years. What a story. Then, eventually, then Ambarish Maharaj needed a human sacrifice. Oh my God. And so he got one particular individual named Shunashepa, and Shunashepa took shelter of Vishwamitra Muni and said, "Save me." Vishwamitra Muni asked one of his sons to substitute for this Shunashepa. His sons refused, so Vishwamitra Muni cursed all of his sons. He has anger issues. He cursed all of his sons to become Shudras. And then he saved Shunashepa by telling him to pray to Lord Vishnu, and Shunashepa was pleased. Then he executed austerity for another 1,000 years, and he got the blessing from Lord Brahma to become a Rishi. He wasn't happy at that point. Then he started to execute austerity again, and then Manika came. So this is how you change your varnas. Anyone's interested in changing varnas is the process. So then Manika came, and we all know that whole story. For 10 years he lived with her, and had this nice little kid, Shakuntala, who was later married to Dushmanta, and Shakuntala gave birth to Bharat, from whom this planet is named, or whom Bharat Varshi is named. So then he lost all of his potency then, you know, living with this Apsara for 10 years. And then he meditated by the Kaushika River for thousands of more years. Poor guy, you know. Really frustrated. And then he was given the title of Maharishi by Lord Buddha. That wasn't enough for him. Then he meditated for 1,000 more years, living only on air. He gave up his vegan diet. And then Ramba came. Ramba was another Apsara. She came and tested him, and this time he didn't want to cohabit with her. So he basically cursed her to become there's several stories. One is that she was burnt. Another story is she was cursed to become a stone for 1,000 years. So then he lost all of his potency again. And then he meditated for another 1,000 years. And at this particular point, he's getting ready to eat after 1,000 years fast. And Indra came to test him as a Brahmin. Indra was dressed as a Brahmin. Indra said, "I'm hungry." And there's only enough food for one person. So he gave Indra that food, and he passed the test. Then he was called the Brahma Rishi. And after being a Brahma Rishi, he and Vasishtha Muni became friends. It's a long process to become a friend. So anyway, so this is the story that Prabhupada refers to in terms of Vishwamitra, who Prabhupada said was said to be a Brahmin and Kshatriya combined at different times. So, anyway, generally, talking about varnas, generally one should ascertain what one's varna is. And Krishna says in the Gita, it's better to do your own duty, even if improperly performed, than another's duty. And one may question, oh, we're all Vaishnavas, we're all chanting Hare Krishna, we're all supposed to be Brahmins, which really isn't true. But Krishna was also preaching to Arjuna, who is a Vaishnava. I mean, who amongst us is as good a Vaishnava as Arjuna? I mean, Arjuna was able to understand, you know, we're so-called Brahmanas, and after 500 years of studying Bhagavad Gita, we don't understand Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna was able to understand in 35, 40 minutes. So, hey, you know, who's more qualified? So anyway, but one of the main things that Krishna is instructing Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita to do is do your prescribed duty. Prescribed duty means according to one's psychophysical nature. And Krishna says it's better to do your own duty, even if imperfectly, and then do another's duty, even if you can do it better. So we should ascertain, and that's one of the duties of the spiritual master, to ascertain the psychophysical nature of the disciple, because everybody would like to think of themselves as a Brahmin. Everybody would like to think of themselves as a sannyasi. Not one, of course. Isn't it? I mean, all the young brahmacharis, they hang. And, it, you know, in the early days, every brahmacharya was thinking, you know, I'll just remain unmarried for my whole life. And little did they know they were going to be married. I remember one time I was in Denmark many, many years ago, and the devotees were discussing how to keep this beautiful project together. They had a beautiful, like, farm community right outside of Copenhagen. And it was a financial problem, just maintaining the whole thing. This is after a particular individual left the movement who used to be the GDC, the guru of that particular area. And I said, here's a strategy, because we were having a strategic planning. Here's the strategy. I said, basically, all of you are going to end up getting married after some time. And you each make your homes here and divide the property up, and that way you can keep the property, this magnificent property. And they looked at me like I was crazy. They said, what are you talking about? We're eternal Brahman. We're nice Shiki Brahmacharya. And then what happened is we lost the property, and they all got married. In that order. Because people were not honest insofar as their own psychophysical nature with the Varnashram. Prabhupada really did want Varnashram instituted in our Krishna consciousness movement in order to have a stable society. So everyone should understand a particular Varna and work accordingly. And there's no harm. If one is Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, they can all go back to Garden. Now, look, Lord Chaitanya's greatest devotees. I mean, like, Ramananda Roy was not a sannyasi, he wasn't a brahmacharya, he was married. King Prataparudra was married. Some of the greatest devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greatest associates, Srinivasacharya, was not, of course, directly with Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya was present. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was one of the, perhaps the primary acharya, one of the three primary acharyas of the second generation after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one shouldn't consider one's varna or ashram. One should consider it, but one shouldn't negate or consider one's varna ashram to be a detriment to one's spiritual advancement. So, any questions or comments? We got about a half minute. Yes?
You know the one when he was sitting next to a tree and a bird?
Passed through along his head, yeah.
Yeah, having that kind of power that he had, he should have just made it vanish off and just continue to meditate.
Yeah, he could have said, let the stool be burned.
Why burn it?
No, because he was angry. He wasn't thinking strategically. He was angry. How can that bird do that, stupid bird? Like we respond sometimes like that, you know, and not in a productive way for something. We sort of blame someone else, which isn't productive. And so he was angry at the bird.
But he was meditating. He should have been.
I mean, I know that, but he had Kshatriya tendency. That was the whole point.
The whole story about frustration.
That was the whole point. He had Kshatriya tendency in the motive passion. So you tend to think in the motive passion in terms of friends and enemies. And the motive goodness, if someone's a motive goodness, they... bird would pass stool on your head, you just think, well, this bird doesn't have self-control, you pray for the bird's benefit. And Shanghai could